Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro call. Today is September 5th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to MotoVitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by visiting MotoVitality.com, where you can listen to well over a decade of archived and recorded calls. Scary to do that, to go back and listen to that from years ago. Anyway, though, again, a couple announcements. First off, I will be hopefully we'll get to see you guys at Eastern Water Quality Association or some of you next week. Please stop by our booth and say hello, and then stick around. I'm speaking on Friday about hiring and training service and installer technicians. The following week, we will be at the Culligan Tri-State Convention in Michigan. And so those of you that are Culligan people, I would love to see you there if you happen to attend that. I'll also be speaking there on the same topic. And then immediately following that, we'll be in Chicago for the WQA Leadership Conference, the Mid-Year Leadership Conference. And so lots of opportunities. Please look me up if you guys are attending any of those. Say hello. I'd love to say hi. We do have a couple more spots available for our premium installer training, which, of course, includes the option for WQA certification. The virtual begins September 16th, and we will be live in the, I think, second week of October is when the on-site version of that is. So if you have anybody that is looking to become, you want the training, you want the practice, you want to learn yourself, please inquire. And then also just wanted to point out that we do get calls periodically. This is an appeal for support. Any amount, $10, $15, it all adds up, and we are putting that aside for a scholarship program for those companies that could really benefit from the installer training. I contend that helps all of us when we are learning how to do proper drain connections and properly install. So please consider supporting the industry and supporting the scholarship program. We are putting together a recognition package for those donations, specifically appreciation, thanks, for going out on the website and through our mailing list and those sorts of things. So please consider supporting the industry by helping raise the professionalism throughout. So with all of that, let me start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is by asking, is there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that is worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? Any questions you might have?
As we discussed earlier in the week, Kelly, this is Paul up in Traverse City, Michigan. I am going through that process of sanitizing anion resin and to ensure that we don't get a fishy smell off of that resin once we get it sanitized. It's a lengthy process from everything that I've been told by a couple of different resin manufacturers. So stay tuned and I'll let you know. It is something that I am learning.
And yeah, so from when you say sanitizing, your question was do you use, in your experience, when you've used bleach, a little bit of bleach in that, then it creates, it really causes that fishy smell. And so would you want to use hydrogen peroxide instead? Would that help with the fishy smell? Is that correct?
That is an opportunity, and I do have a paper on it from ResinTech. I'm not promoting anybody, but they were the only resin company to respond. The other company, I have yet to hear from them. It's been several days now, and it's their media. It's not even ResinTech's media.
Interesting. We are a resin.
You know,
Motor Vitality is a resin tech distributor, so it's okay to promote them.
Okay.
They're one of our suppliers.
a double backwash brine regeneration process after you go through the bleaching sanitization process. If anybody's wondering why am I trying to sanitize, a customer got a coliform positive on a well water test. Now he's concerned that it's lodged up in his treatment systems for a nitrate system. This is the water that he drinks. He wants to sanitize all of his systems. He has a water boss in his house, nothing that we sold him. I'm told that that unit's got carbon in it. And so with that being said, does the chlorine system even work? You know, the over-infiltration of chlorine across that resin bed, does that sanitize it or does the carbon hang onto it? I was unaware that the water boss had a mixed bed of resin and carbon. And then an anion resin and chlorine don't play well together. It is possible, but there is a hold time. It's a lengthy process from what I'm being told through Resin Tech. And I will send the paper over to you on it, Kelly, when we're done with this call.
Yeah. So Paul, just for clarification on that unit, it's not a mixed bed. They are separate chambers.
No.
They've got mid plates. No. So they're not mixing the media.
I will never do a mixed bed system ever again, ever.
Yeah.
Too many. It's not a matter of,
yeah.
It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when is it going to fail. And
yeah,
I
yeah.
promise you it will fail and you will have an issue.
I know there's a lot of companies out there that still do it, but I'm not a fan of them. Of them either, by any means. Yeah, so mixed bed versus...
We've been doing this since 73, and it may have taken years, but it happens.
Well, the difference, a mixed bed is when you take the media, you know, a lot of times people will throw carbon right on top of resin. You know, they'll put it directly on top. It ends up getting mixed into that resin, and the carbon always fouls before the resin does, which means that you're prematurely rebedding the entire unit if you have that as an issue. So I like the mid-plate options when they have those, if you're able to, you know, to gain access to the carbon. Sometimes they sonic weld or glue those mid-plates in. You know, if you can keep them separate, that's not a horrible option, but I'm with you on the mixed bed. I know there's a lot of companies out there that do it, and they have the reasons for it, but... I also am not a fan of them. So, but same thing, people will put a little bit of tannin resin right on top of a cation resin as well. Not a fan of that either. So, but any type of mixed
bed. If you have iron in the water supply, the first thing you're hitting is that anion resin. You're serving no purpose.
Yeah. So, all right. Thank you, Paul. Anybody else? So we've had this topic before. It's been 2 or 3 years since we did it, and sometimes I go back and I'll recycle old topics for two reasons. Number one, it's hard to come up with topics, like 50 topics a year. so I'll go back and recycle those topics sometimes. But the ones that I recycle are ones that I think are worth having a discussion about again, because – I see it over and over and over. So today we're going to, you know, I called this, you break it, you buy it. And I ran into this just recently when I was doing, another installation, and I went to do the reverse osmosis system under the sink. I was pulling out an old reverse osmosis system and replacing a new one and the tailpiece on the sink was just it was just old and of great concern, and I was really trying to be very careful about. I mean, so the reverse osmosis that was under the sink was also very old. The supply line, I really did not like the supply that they had used. You could tell that they had had iron going in. They had the clear RO lines running in, and that they were just gross, you know, brown, and you could tell inside the lines. And so I wanted to replace all of the tubing anyway under there. I was trying to be very careful around that tailpiece, but I noticed that it was very old, and I was very concerned about it being brittle or breaking. Now, I carry with me a spare tailpiece assembly, like I always have in my install kit on my truck. I carry a universal trap under the sink trap kit. So tailpiece, trap, extra nuts, flanges, all that stuff. And because I have been under those sinks way too many times, unfortunately I didn't learn from this only happening one time. It's happened to me multiple times where something happened. I was under a sink doing an installation, and then suddenly I bump it, or it's brittle and it breaks and cracks, and next thing you know, even though this wasn't part of putting the reverse osmosis system in, I'm having to run down to the hardware store and buy a new trap assembly, and I'm replacing their entire trap. And at that point, because I didn't discuss it with the homeowner, I didn't talk to them about it, that's on me in my time and my cost. Fortunately, on this one that I did last week, I recognized the potential for the problem. And I discussed it with the homeowner, and instead of risking breaking their tailpiece and having to replace it for my cost, I suggested to them that I could replace their whole trap assembly under the sink, and I charged them an additional $75 to do that. I was able to do it all while I was underneath. They're putting in a new reverse osmosis system anyway, but there was a big difference between breaking it accidentally and being responsible for it and not, and having it cost me money out of the margins, or in fixing it repairing it and being able to charge for that. Similarly, I think we run across situations. I mean, look, we're in basements all the time. We see pressure tanks. I don't know if you guys have. I certainly have seen pressure tanks down in a basement that are clearly 15, 20, plus 30 years old, rusted around the bottom. And we check it. It works. They seem to have pressure. No problem. But inevitably, 2-3 weeks later, that pressure tank, that 20-year-old pressure tank, is going to break. And this is Murphy's Law. So it's a law of what happens, in our business, right? That pressure tank breaks, and though you didn't have anything to do with it, the fact that it was a 20-year-old pressure tank and it was going to break. I mean, it's more than twice the expected life, it's got more than twice its life expectancy, and yet it was working before you got there. It's not working now. It's sprung a leak. And customers, they tend to blame you. So what's the solution? It is to have that conversation with that customer. You see that leaky, that rusted out pressure tank. It's to have that conversation. Now, whether your company does, installs or replaces pressure tanks, that's a different thing. But even if you don't, you should absolutely be having that conversation with the customer and noting it, documenting that on the paperwork. Because otherwise, one of two things is going to happen. Either your company is going to be responsible for replacing that pressure tank, which I don't think you should be. But the other possibility and more likely scenario is that the customer is going to blame you, and they're going to have a sour taste in their mouth about your company. And even if you did just a fantastic job on the installation, the sales was great, the service was great, everything was great, the last thing they're going to associate with your company is that you broke their pressure tank and wouldn't fix it, or you did something to mess that up. Same thing with water heaters. Same thing with any type of a plumbing fitting. You get that those old gate valves down there that look all corroded and rusted from electrolysis, and you're afraid that if you look at it, it's going to start dripping or leaking. If you have that conversation ahead of time, charge for it. It gives you the opportunity to charge for it. You're doing that plumbing assessment. You're talking about it. You're taking pictures and photos. You're not suggesting that you do your job. You know, we're not professional visitors, right? We are allowed to make a profit, but it's important to have those conversations and document those conversations ahead of time and charge for it, because there's a cost associated. If you're going to replace ball valves, I mean, not that we're plumbers, some of us aren't, I'm not. But I can certainly replace the, cut out a, in fact, this install that I did last week, I charged for it. I probably did not charge enough, to be completely honest with you, because I got there and it was half of it was PEX and half of it was copper. And I, even though I ended up doing a little bit of extra in replacing a lot of the hodgepodge PEX that was in there, shark bite fittings and a lot of other things, mostly because even though it wasn't my responsibility, and this was my own personal decision and something that I probably should have done a better job of when I initially priced out the job, to take a look at it. But the work that I did was in such stark contrast with some of the plumbing that was in proximity to what I did, that I just had to, I didn't want that crappy, dangling, old shark bite, uneven PEX next to the nice, straight, pro-pressed copper installation that I did. So I ended up cutting out substantially more of the PEX and putting in pro-press. Just because I didn't, if somebody ever looked at that job, I didn't want them going, why didn't they just do this? You know, why didn't they fix that? And I think that's what sometimes customers or other people look at. Anyway, this is kind of my thoughts on this. I'm curious about you guys. What is your policy? You know, Paul, I know you have a crew there. You know, do you guys have a policy in this? How do you address those potential issues that are really not in your wheelhouse? They're really not your responsibility, but they can have an impact on the way customers view you, moving forward.
If we see something horrible under the sink, like say in a reverse osmosis situation, we will ask the customer to contact the plumber to get it taken care of. That is out of our scope. If it's something, we're drilling into something and it snaps, we always have the tail pieces and things available in our vehicle. We've had more issues with, garbage disposals and the way that they're handling
it. Yeah, that's a good one too, yeah.
Something's going to fall down. And, the customer is getting perturbed with us, and it's just like we do everything to be apologetic and state this is completely out of our scope and arena of work that we're to be performing here. And if this fails, you're gonna be blaming it on us. And this needs to be corrected before we can do this job properly for you. And same goes in the basement, gate valves. My guys, I have instructed every one of my sales team and my service techs and installers, you make sure that gate valve works. There's a lot of times those gates get screwed up and they get stuck or they you close them and then you can't get them back open because you can't get it to jump back on. You do that and you don't have any water for the customer again. It was your fault. So it's we run into some interesting scenarios in many, many cases. And if we do break it, we do fix it for the customer.
Unless, do you guys, as a rule, like if you see those gate valves, I actually, a couple of weeks ago, cut out and using this for installer training, I cut out some a whole section of PEX that had some electrolysis going on. When I went to cut out this PEX, I'd noticed a little drip over the top of a water heater, and I had decided ahead of time that I was going to cut that out and replace it. But there were copper rings on the PEX, and when I went to cut it out, one of the copper rings – fell apart. It fell off. I mean, it was so corroded around this PEX fitting that it literally, I barely even touched it, and the whole thing just fell off like it had been cut through. It was crazy. Do you guys, as a rule, when you see that, do you replace it? Certainly there's an opportunity to charge for it, but what is your, how do you have that discussion with the homeowner?
There's certain things that we can do and we can't do inside the home as well, legally, with permits and inspectors.
Yeah, that's going to change each state and local jurisdiction for sure, yeah.
Yeah. Everything is addressed on a case-by-case study, and I'm not trying to bring that inspector into play, but I have to bring that inspector into play because on new builds, generally we're not going to have an issue, but you better have a permit. On replacement, we don't have to have a permit. We will discuss with the customer if there is an issue and it's something that we can fix. We are not your plumbing company, though. We are here to install an appliance.
Yeah, right.
And my sales team or my installation or my service team that is out there that is bringing the lead back, I am certainly hopeful, and we have guided them, and I do believe that these conversations are being had in the home with the homeowner. This needs to be corrected. And this is, again, out of our scope. And I'm not trying to skirt the work. We got a lot of work to do up here, though. You know, we're doing six installs a day, three crews, sometimes two or three. Sometimes we're doing nine installs a day.
Yeah.
We can't be spending a ton of time. We're expecting to be, you know, ready to go in two and a half hours at the home. Get in and out.
Sure.
And when you're,
what about anybody else?
Staff, you know, we're limited on staff, so it's really hard to spend that extra time. And we want to take care of the customer, but it's really hard to take care of the customer sometimes, especially when it's out of the arena of exactly what it is that we are doing.
What you really need to do is hire a couple of new installers and send them to a certain installer training facility that's right just south of you a little bit.
Right?
Yeah.
First thing is finding the breathing body that is capable.
Yes, I know. Exactly. That is, these days it is the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah,
so,
come to Traverse City, Michigan, everybody. I got open positions.
Yep. So, all right. Who else? Who else has any other thoughts? What are the policies? How do you guys handle this stuff? Are you like Paul, where you, inform the customer, but kind of mostly leave it up to them, it sounds like, except in those situations where it's going to have a direct impact on you, right, Paul? I think is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
How else are you guys doing it? How are you handling this? Or do you disagree
like
that it's even your responsibility at all?
Let me say one more thing, Kelly, in regards to this aspect. You're in a house and you're on a well and you've got a shutoff valve in the basement and that shutoff valve doesn't work. And then you kill that pump on that well. And then that pump doesn't fire back up.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. You lose prime or something happens. Yeah, that's going to be a pretty expensive fix.
Yeah, just we've run into that.
Do your technicians know how to reprime a pump if necessary? I mean, that's part of that training for sure.
Yeah.
What else? Anybody else? What other thoughts do we have on this? Anybody else?
Nobody likes our conversation, Kelly.
it's okay, Paul. I enjoy talking to you. It's all right. So, I mean, I think, you know, do you guys have a place on the paperwork where you're going to document those issues, you know? I will add, documentation is the absolute key here, okay, to avoid a lot of these things. And your salespeople should 100% be learning how to do a proper plumbing assessment. It has to start with the sales professional going in, the person who's going into that home, doing a thorough plumbing assessment. And look, I get the challenges on this too. You get those, sometimes salespeople don't like to do that. They don't take pictures. But these days, man, it's just you've got to hold your sales team accountable for these things. They have got to be trained to understand. I mean, it starts there. It starts there. They've got to, when they do their plumbing assessment, they've got to make those notes. They've got to talk about that. They've got to take pictures of it. They've got to document that stuff. They've got to write it down, and they have to document that they've had conversations with the customer about it. And they have to prepare the installer for the potential that those problems might arise. Look, I, as a salesperson, you know, there's a lot of companies, and I think rightly so, that discourage their salespeople from touching any of the plumbing. So you see that gate valve that's questionable. You know, do you check it? Well, if the salesperson's not equipped to do, you know, they go to turn that valve off and to see if it works or doesn't work, are they going to – I had, when I was in sales one time, I ran into this. I mean, true story, on a Saturday, because I had a sales appointment on a Saturday, and I saw this valve, and I was trying to get a raw water sample, and I turned this valve off. This is a gate valve. I tried to turn it off, and when I did, the entire top of the valve just snapped off, and water started just squirting out like crazy, just spraying out. This was back before – I mean, I started in the industry in sales. This was back before I had ever soldered pipe. This was back before shark bites were a thing. They had never invented, you know, they didn't have these push connect fittings like shark bites or Prolox or anything like that. And so, I mean, this thing pops off on a Saturday. The office was closed. And the only way to turn the water off was to turn the well off. I'm trying to get in touch with our service department. They weren't able to get out there. I was married at the time. I ended up calling my father-in-law because I didn't know how to sweat pipe back then. And I ended up calling my father-in-law, who came out and sweated and was able to sweat on a shutoff valve and get them water again. Man, it was costly though. You know, and I mean, these days, I'll tell you, if I were in sales these days and again, it's a good idea not to touch the stuff if you're in sales and you don't know how to fix it. I've never been smart enough to not, you know, to follow that advice. So I unfortunately have broken many. That's why I learned how to put these things in and fix them, because it was by necessity, because it was to fix my own screw-ups or, you know, when I was out there touching stuff. So admittedly, this is a, you know, kind of do as I say, not as I do type thing for sure. But these days I'd have shark bites and, you know, a way to clean and cut tubing and a couple shark bites in there just as a temporary fix so that I could get them water again. So I could get that water shut off, you know, and get it fixed. So having a few things on the truck like that, I think is a good idea, but your salespeople have to be trained to take those pictures and to communicate those things ahead of time so that the installer is aware of those possibilities. And this requires conversation between your two departments to make sure that they're communicating so that your salespeople are not putting your installers in a situation that's going to extend the amount of time that they're spending on the job or increasing those costs. It has to start, and frankly, the salesperson should be, if they see something like that, and they need to abide by the policy, right? So there's, Paul, your point that there's some things that, you know, you're not plumbers. But if the salesperson charges for the time and material to cut out three corroded, nasty gate valves and replace them with, you know, this as an example, I know a lot of times you're using the factory bypass on the equipment, but, you know, if they want those gate valves cut out and replaced with ball valves are very expensive. And the time it takes to replace them is, you know, there's got to be a charge there. There's got to be, you know, that's got to be accounted for, and so that you know how to schedule it. And if the salesperson has done their job in doing a proper plumbing assessment, then those conversations are a lot easier to have with the customer. You know, this isn't as easy as it says, you know, as it sounds, because that requires your salespeople and your installers to have a good relationship too. They've got to be communicating with each other and talking to each other. This is something we should probably have a call about in the future again, the not too distant future, because you know, you got to take a look at what are you doing to make sure that your sales and service departments are communicating. Because otherwise, what ends up happening, the salesperson discusses it with the homeowner and says, I noticed that, when they put in the reverse osmosis here, you may want to get a plumber out here to replace that trap. And if the customer senses in any way that there's not good communication between the sales and the installer, what they're going to do is they're going to tell your installer, yeah, your salesperson said that you would replace that trap assembly. And the installer, if the installer doesn't have a good relationship with the salesperson and he's seeing the possibility that the salesperson would actually say that, he's going to be mad. And the customer is going to sense that, and then they're going to get a free. You know, it could be that the salesperson said, "You need to get a plumber, or we're going to charge you $150 to replace that, or something like that." But if it's not communicated, or there's not a good relationship between the sales and the service, then the customer is going to exploit that lack of communication. I mean, it's sometimes what happens. Any final thoughts here before we finish up today? Okay, everybody, we will be live from the Eastern Water Quality Association next week, next Thursday morning. And so if you're out there, please swing by and say hello. Other than that, be safe and have a fantastic weekend. Talk to you guys next week, if not before. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John. Bye.